October 10th, 1989. Interview with Beatrice Cullerton. Oh, well.
So you've been to Vancouver?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you meet Janet, what's her name, Janet Campbell Hale?
No.
She's a writer from the States.
I know. I've met her about 10 years ago when she was in Davis.
In Davis,
California. I spent a year there at Deakey University. That's a small Native and Chicano community college.
Uh-huh.
But I was actually doing research at the University of California. But I taught it just to help out at DKU. And they once had a writer's conference and she was there. And I read her Jailing of Cecilia Capture.
Yeah.
I didn't know that she's in Vancouver. So you're sort of connected with her.
Actually, I met her when I was in Vancouver in April of 88, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
that I went to Vancouver to do some readings there, and I ran
mm-hmm.
into her there. So we met and
mm-hmm.
you know, talked, and I got her book and really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And she has another one too, I don't know what it's called, it was a little paperback when I saw it, and it was called...
Custer Lives in Humboldt County?
No.
No.
Mm-hmm. I think it was about a young boy.
Oh yes,
on a farm
I've seen that in a bibliography, it's juvenile fiction.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think so.
Well, you got one in that genre as well, The White Spirit of the White Bison.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I got that at home.
And I'm working slowly on one. I've been working on it for a long time now, but I don't have a manuscript of it ready. Oh, do you take sugar and...
No, nothing.
Just black?
Mm-hmm, please. Thank you.
Okay. I guess we can...
Yeah? I think it's growing, huh? Does it pick up?
It's
turning.
Oh yeah,
it's fine. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, I don't know what I'll be doing with this. I maybe just play it or parts of it to students over there.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm teaching a course this term, which is starting next week, on minority women novelists in North America, which is a rather large area, but. One or two of the sessions will be on In Search of April Raintree, so it's a good idea if the students can actually hear, oh, there's a person, a living person with a voice that wrote this. You know, it's not just a book they have, so that's
mm-hmm.
what I might be using it for.
Do you teach in German or
in
English?
When the texts are in English, we do teach in English. Because the students are future teachers of English,
uh-huh.
so they should get as much practice as possible. But this is not done at all universities. Very often, even English students, they speak German most of the time.
Mm.
But we try to, I actually make it as a rule. But sometimes we also get students from a sort of comparative literature program, and their English is not very good, so sometimes we use German as well.
Mm.
But in this class, I'm sure we'll be using English. So you don't have to do it in German.
Dig out my German dictionary.
Mm-hmm. Are you learning German?
No, actually not.
Mm-hmm. So maybe you can start telling something about yourself and how you came to write that book.
Okay. Well, I decided to write the book after the second suicide of a member of my family. I had two sisters and and a brother, and both of my sisters committed suicide at different times. And I just decided to, that I was going to write a book after the second one. And what I would use in the book was what had affected our lives, and part of that was being raised in foster homes, and because of the alcoholism of my parents, and I think the effect that growing up in today, you know, like for Native people growing up in urban Canada today is there's a lot of pressure on you to assimilate and forget totally what you are as, you know, as a person, what your heritage is and everything. And so, like, as a child, I never thought about all that, you know, all that was going on. But as and as an adult, I didn't think about it either, you know, like if I watched TV and the news and there was Indian problems happening somewhere, it didn't really concern me because I'd grown up in white foster homes, and that, you know, like I really, I guess you could say I really fell for, you know, fell for it, you know. So, so it was, you know, after the second suicide that I really thought, you know, like, well, why, why are my family members alcoholics? And why do we have so many problems, you know, like I grew up with a lot of other foster kids, you know, that came in and out of the home where I was mostly raised, and they all had problems, you know, coping and as adults, they all had problems, and so did I, but not as bad as them, because I never became an alcoholic, so that wasn't a problem with me. But most of my foster sisters, even those who weren't Native, they had problems too. So
well, it's the foster situation on top of the racism.
Yeah, so it's two things, you know, and with them, you know, like everybody's having problems and everything. So I decided by writing maybe I could figure out some of the answers or something, you know, at least rethink the way I guess I'd been living, you know, like kind of blind, like kind of like with my head in the sand or something, you know, like and eventually what came out of the book, like as I wrote, it wasn't going to be about a search for identity, but while I was writing, that's what I realized about myself, was that I had to accept my identity, not to make everything right or, you know, things like that. It doesn't happen like that, you know, but it gives me, I think, a strong foundation, you know, like it doesn't, I'm not so wounded by what's happening with Indian problems, and I can get more involved in it by understanding more, you know, their side of the situation, as well as the white side of the situation. The white side, I say, because it's the dominant society,
oh, yeah,
you know,
sure,
so it's not. And then I think writing about, well, when I first wrote, I wrote three rough drafts before the actual book was published.
When you were writing, were you writing part-time or full-time, or?
I wrote full-time. I wrote in the month of April of 1981. I wrote that whole month, day and night almost, on the first rough draft.
That was right after the event.
Well, my sister had died in October 1980, and I was going to start writing then, but then we had a house fire and we had to relocate and things like that, you know. So I didn't really start writing until after I did our taxes, you know.
Mm-hmm. Was that in Winnipeg?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it was in Oak Bank, which is close to Winnipeg. Like, mm-hmm. first we lived in Vida, Manitoba, which is about 80 miles south of Winnipeg. We lived on a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And that was with my first husband. Mm-hmm. George is my second husband.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I got the Colleton name.
Mm-hmm.
But I've...
What was your own family name?
It's what I've taken back now. It's Mosenier. It's a French name.
How do you spell it?
M-O-S. M-O-S-I-O-N-I-E-R. Yeah.
Okay.
So if I write any more books, I'll be writing it under mm-hmm. Monsignor rather than Colleton.
Mm-hmm.
And...
You said that eventually it wasn't going to be about establishing identity or finding identity?
No, not when I started out. It was kind of about alcoholism and
mm-hmm.
It wasn't about any foster homes because I didn't want anybody to think bad of where I grew up, you know, like...
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you make that very clear because there are various places where the two sisters grew up. Some
yeah.
of them are good and some of them are horrid.
Yeah.
So...
Eventually that's what I decided to do, was make one really good family and one...
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody wanted to identify, you know, like say, oh, this is what they were like or something,
mm-hmm.
The good family was more easily identifiable to my own foster family, although
mm-hmm.
they weren't the people. And then I wrote about the bad foster home because... I felt people ought to know about those homes too, you know,
oh, yeah.
because
yeah.
I'd heard about them. Foster
mm-hmm.
kids that
oh,
came
yeah.
through our place had been there, you know, so it's not, it wasn't, I don't think it's unusual, but people kind of just closed their eyes to it. They don't really want to get into it, you know, like they don't want to know about them.
In my country as well.
Mm-hmm.
My wife works in, or used to work in foster homes and helped actually to close some of them down because they were so terrible.
Yeah.
They're just terrible.
Yeah, and that's awful, you know, like
mm-hmm.
they have this thing going on TV often now
it's
about
the ones.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, like, okay. That's
you know,
from
that
Maldives,
is just,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
mm-hmm.
you know, like that kind of thing has happened a lot to Native kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who they used to adopt them to the States or to other provinces
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
Manitoba, and one boy killed his father. I think his name is David Cameron, but I'm not really
mm-hmm.
sure about that. But his father in the States in North Dakota or South Dakota or somewhere there had been sexually abusing these kids that he was adopting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, now the boy's in jail, you know, like for I don't know how long, but he was in Stony Mountain when I was there, but I didn't get to see him.
There's a book that just came out with Fifth House, James Tynan, Inside Out. He was a Métis, a boy, was adopted into a white family. He grew up somewhere close to Regina,
mm-hmm.
Indian Head, that's just west of Regina. And he ended up on Skid Row and in prison. He wrote the book in prison, actually. Because of the racism going on there and not being able to fully identify with his adopted family, who he loved very much. I mean, they were...
Mm-hmm.
He says this again and again, that they were trying to be very good to him, and they were. But there were other things. That just came out. It was
See, a lot of times you don't know all those influences that are on you, and you kind of wonder why you're bad.
Yeah, that's what he was
writing
about.
And you can't figure it out, you know?
Yeah. The way, if I look at your book, or I mean, there are several books that came out of Canada, but also U.S., by Native people, where the protagonist sort of is in a search for identity, and usually sort of goes through a circle, first away from the origins and the root and into a lot of conflict, and then there's a return. Very often there's a ritual or a renewal to reestablish the sort of Native identity. And if I look at your book, I think that's there too. Or you could also say it's two circles, because the two sisters together form a unity.
Yeah. See, one goes too far one way.
Yeah.
And the other goes too far the other way.
Yeah. But they overlap, because they start off in the beginning, they go two different ways, and then there's an overlap where they don't meet, and in the end they almost change sides, right?
Yeah.
Or is that a wrong interpretation?
Well, Cheryl doesn't change sides.
But her way of life changes.
Oh yeah,
Her, no, I don't mean
her
sides
ideals
politically.
And everything, yeah.
No.
Her ideals and everything are they're on a fragile foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So it's easier to shatter her idealism, and out of that comes hopelessness. You know, the fact that she too is an alcoholic, and. So her foundation, although she's identified very strongly with the Indian side of her, it's not a true. Why I always think in terms of foundation, you know.
Yeah.
If you have a solid foundation, you can do a lot from that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So. And April had experienced a lot of hardships in her life as she was growing up, so she was more capable of handling future hardships, because a lot of times too, if you have hardships in your life as you're growing up, it kind of prepares you for future.
If it doesn't destroy you, no.
Yeah. You know, if you can overcome it, and April's a survivor.
How come she survives?
I think it's just in her, just in her blood, you know, to survive. When I look back, like at my own life, at my parents were both alcoholics, but they're really still, in spite of that, they're fantastic people. Like, I'm not close to them, and because I grew up in foster homes from the time I was three, so I'm not at all close to them. I'm not close to the main foster family that I grew up in. I'm not close to them either. I think at an early age I rejected both of them, you know, like I rejected the idea of family, you know, like, you know. But my parents are really, to me, they're very admirable, you know. In spite of their alcoholism, they live today, they support themselves, you know. I mean, they don't support themselves, like they're on old age pension now, but they take care of themselves, you know, like they're not dependent on anybody to take care of them. And they do what they want, and they're self-sufficient, you know, they handle their own finances and all that kind of thing, you know, so they're very independent, and I admire that about them. So, did I get off the track of writing?
Yeah, a little, but that's okay.
I forget where I was at.
said,
but there's so many things that that were involved in the writing of the book, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it, I could probably talk again and say, you know, something different. But basically,
mm-hmm.
the thing started because of the suicide in my family.
Mm-hmm.
That affected me, and in that way, in the book, Cheryl's suicide affects April
mm-hmm.
very profoundly, you know,
mm-hmm.
where she's finally decided, you know, she has no choice but to accept
mm-hmm.
who she is. And if she can do good for other people, you know, in her situation, good, you know.
Mm-hmm. There's the scene, and you've been talking about foundations. In a way, she has very brittle foundations when it comes to maybe traditional native ways, because she was taken away at such an early age. But then there's the scene where April takes her along to this gathering, and there's this old woman who gives her hand. And the way I saw that scene, I think that's a very important one. Because she sort of receives some identity or some power there.
Yeah, it's just, see, all her life she's grown up, and natives are very disrespected in the West especially.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of contempt and even hatred. You know, but people are very polite, and they say they're not prejudiced, they're not racist, you know,
sure.
all that stuff, you know. But you know, when they start patronizing you,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's a sign where they think they're superior, you know. All that kind of thing, you know. And as a child growing up, you're very aware of all that. Nobody has to tell you people are prejudiced or racist or they're patronizing you. You know it's phony.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it begins to build an anger in you. But at the same time, people react differently. People, like oppressed people who feel the prejudice, a lot of them react differently
mm-hmm.
to that thing. So some people become anti-white, you know,
mm-hmm.
Hate whites.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's all different ways
yeah.
to handle it. So anyways, April's way and my way was to also look down on natives and not want anything to do with them.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You see, so
she was quite brainwashed in a way.
Yeah.
Believing in the white success story and
yeah.
the knight in shining
exactly,
armor.
Exactly, yeah.
And then really
and
getting
want
much
white,
worse.
You know, and
yeah,
and
yeah. And then really being hit much more profoundly because of the hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So when this woman touches her, it's the first indication that, like, not, it's a very simple truth, but not all native people are drunks and
yeah.
you know
mm-hmm.
no good for nothings and all
mm-hmm.
that, you know,
mm-hmm.
like it's just a power that you can feel sometimes
mm-hmm.
from a person,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's
mm-hmm.
So, like encouragement or something. I like you because you're you,
mm-hmm.
nothing, but not because of your money or your, you know, all your, say, education or whatever, you know, but because you're a person. And that's the kind of thing that happened there with her. I guess the other, like, another part of the story, the way I wrote April Raintree, was to make Cheryl more lovable than April. Because, you know, when she died, like, she could attain a lot if she went all the way through with what she could do, you know. Even if she became a social worker, she wouldn't stop there. She'd, you know, do a lot of good for Native people. She had the brains and the possibility of doing it, of going for the whole thing. And plus she was very likable, you know, when she wasn't drunk.
Mm-hmm.
When she wasn't drinking, you know.
Very creative and exuberant.
And so I wanted people really to get involved with her over April.
Mm-hmm.
So that they'd really feel the pain when she died.
Mm-hmm.
And with April, well, she was like, she was the main character, like it was always planned that way. She was the main character, but but because of the way she thought, and because of her feelings and everything, you know, I knew she wasn't going to be all that likable, you know, once she got older.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to build her, you know, her audience in when she was very young, you know, with the things she did when she was young,
mm-hmm.
and let her see what she could be. You know, and then for the rest of the story, she goes through what she does, and then at the end, she comes, you know, full circle.
Yeah.
So in a way, I kind of felt that way too. And one of the things that happened, like I'd always been pretty much neutral in my feelings about Native people and white people as an adult, you know, as
mm-hmm.
an old, like more recently, just before I wrote the book. And after I wrote the book, that's how I got started working at Pemmican, was because
mm-hmm.
I submitted
mm-hmm.
the manuscript
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got the opportunity to work there and then eventually become manager there.
Mm-hmm.
And when I became manager, I of course got involved in a lot of Native things going on. I'd never ever been involved in anything Native.
Association.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
and that part of that, and other things that were going on
mm-hmm.
too. And for a while, I really had when I learned all the things that had been done to Indians, and then to the Métis. I really felt a real anger towards
mm-hmm.
white society, you know. And it takes a lot to try to be neutral and objective, because as a writer, I think I should be objective in the way that I'm not condemning all white, you know, running around
mm-hmm.
condemning white people, you know, like it's
mm-hmm.
it'd be so easy to do because
and
there's a lot of truth in
it,
you know.
Sure.
But as a Métis, I feel that somewhere in my background there is white blood in me, so
mm-hmm.
I'm part white, and I'm, you know, part Native. So, so I try. If I'm going to write more books, I want to be objective and fair. But still honest.
Even if you're fair and honest, it's devastating for the white side. Because if you look at the history, there's
yeah.
no
it depends what you
want to
concentrate on too, you know, like
sure.
You can concentrate on a lot of the bad stuff and it'd be all
mm-hmm.
true,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah.
But I think there's, you know, there are some good
yeah.
aspects
sure.
too.
Yeah.
To it, like if the whites hadn't come along, I wouldn't be here,
mm-hmm.
you know. So, I mean, I'm not saying that's the good part of it, but
I was going to ask you, but in a way you've answered that already. I mean, if you look at the history of Solomon and your experiences and experiences of your sisters. And the way you then sort of transform that and use it in the book, there must be a lot of hatred and anger. And if you write, does that help you personally to cope with the hatred and the anger?
Well, actually, I never knew, I never realized I had
mm-hmm.
hatred or anger.
Maybe you don't.
In me
I don't
until
know.
I wrote the book.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. People haven't told me that it shows in the book.
No, I'm not
you
saying
know?
That. But it,
so
it would
that's
be
what I want to keep writing like, you know, like, okay. Like I've been fair and honest in the book, and that's the way I want to keep writing. I want to look for good, you know, good sides to both both parties, so to speak, you know.
I didn't mean that anger also shows in the book. Sometimes it's amazing how little anger there is. But the facts speak for themselves.
Yeah.
And if I said students cried or sometimes they got so angry, I mean, it's just the text that evokes that. It's not sort of preaching in this or that direction.
Yeah.
No, certainly not.
See, I probably have a leaning towards preaching, you know, so... So I always have to try to avoid that. I don't know if you've read Spirit of the White Bison.
Yeah, there's more of that.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like when I wrote the first rough draft, there was no white man in it, you know, like all the white men were bad men. And so I had, and it, to me it was way too one-sided, you know, like...
So you put that...
I put that white man in there with a Métis sidekick.
Yeah, yeah.
As, you know, one, you know, as a good, you know, to represent the good side of the white side kind of thing. So that's why he was in there. But yeah, when I first wrote the book, I was angry, you know. I mean, it didn't start out that I was angry. It's just, once you start writing, the anger came, you know, at the, just the injustice and, the way of controlling another people, you know, that makes me angry, you know. But I'm not angry at white people. Like if it were, say, the Indians in there and who were oppressing the white people here, I would be angry with the Indians, of course, you know. Like it's the injustice that people do to each other. There's just no reason for it, you know, like people don't have to be mean to each other to enjoy life, do they?
No. Some people are trying to do.
So
when you read The White Bison, Spirit of the White Bison, did you write that sort of on purpose for young people?
I wrote it because I've been watching this animation on television, Watership Down, about rabbits.
Oh,
it was
yeah.
an animation, you know, and it was really a neat story, you know. And I thought Native people should have a classic cartoon, like animation thing, you know. So I thought about what could I write about, and so eventually I decided to write about a buffalo.
But then you used the white buffalo, and there's the white buffalo calf woman in Lakota, I believe, or Dakota, I believe, the one who brought the pipe.
I'm not familiar with that.
There's among the Sioux, there was the white buffalo calf woman, there was a white buffalo calf, and a beautiful woman. There were two hunters who met her. One of them wanted to rape her, and she just sort of made him disappear. But she told the other one, you go back to your people and tell them I'll be coming, bring you something. And so he went back to camp and told them that she'd be coming to bring them something. She dropped them the pipe. And then she, I think, where she stood, suddenly a white buffalo calf rolled. She had disappeared. Well, it was the other way around. There was a white buffalo calf first, and then the woman, and I think the white buffalo calf again. And then there's this book, I think an atrocious book, by Ruth Beebe Hill, Hantayo, a mystic warrior. It was serialized on television, and the Lakota people, they waged a long war against that because they didn't want her to be found. But she also uses a white buffalo, but in a very, very different way. It doesn't really come in. But I thought maybe that's that we sort of have been aware of the Sioux, white buffalo calf woman,
No.
Uh-huh.
No, I just, sometimes I try not to, like with April Ranger, I didn't do the research till after I had written the first rough draft, because, first of all, I want to write it on my own feelings and what I knew and things like that, not be influenced by other books or things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with White Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Do you read a lot of other books? I mean,
not really
a lot of other
native books. I use books for native books for research, more or less. You know, that's when I read books about natives. But I'm mostly a bestseller reader. You know, trash books, what they call. I'm not a scholarly type of reader.
No, but some of these sort of the books that scholars sort of deal with are a lot of fun to read. And are exciting to read. And you said you read Janet Campbell Hale, right?
Yeah, I read you know those books because I've met the author and I want to read their.
Are there any sort
books?
Of other native authors that you've read or?
Well, of course, Maria Campbell.
Oh, yeah. She encouraged you with that project?
When I went on my first book launch back in September 1983, I stayed at her daughter's place in Saskatoon. Yeah, and then after that we went on a tour of northern Saskatchewan together.
Where did you go, PA?
Further north. All these little towns that a lot of them had to fly in. And it was April and it was scary because I don't like flying.
Oh.
And it was in a little Cessna plane, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They sat in the back and I sat in front with the pilot. And it was quite an experience, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't... like now I won't fly at all in winter, you know, like November 1st, I'm coming back to Toronto from Winnipeg, because I think it might still be okay. I don't like flying in winter, I don't like flying to begin with, but I will. I have, but I've not done as much as I used to. So. But I'm hoping to start doing talks and readings in Toronto schools because I think that kind of thing is necessary here. Not so much because there's a lot of native population here, but there's a lot of I think there's a lot of prejudice and racism that goes on here. People should learn tolerance of each other, you know, like...
Are you aware of other native writers here in Toronto? Or in contact
there's
with them?
There's a poet, Lenore Kishik Tobias.
Yeah, I met her last night.
Oh, yeah?
And she, together with some others, founded the...
Nana Boujouk.
Yeah, the...
Trickster committee.
For the re-establishment... of the trickster,
and
I was wondering whether you sort of connect up with them.
No. It's not what I'm interested in. My shortcoming, I guess, is that I'm very lazy, you know, like I get involved with other things and like writing isn't a priority with me. I've never been an ambitious writer like April Raintree. Before I wrote April Raintree, I wrote a short story and sent it to an editor here that I'd met when I came to my sister's funeral. He worked at McLean Hunter. And I sent a short story to him because, well, I told him, I started telling people I'm going to write a book. And so that I would do it.
So you put yourself under pressure.
Yeah. I tried that this time too, but it hasn't worked. I still haven't written a book. But anyways, He said it was sellable, you know, it wasn't to do it with anything native or anything, it was just an Alfred Hitchcock type of story, a short story, and so once he wrote back and said it was sellable, I started working on April Raintree, and I never did anything with that other story or anything, I just let it sit, and if people want something written from me, you know, like a story by a native writer, I send that to them, but they're not interested because it's not about native.
So
you know,
there's some new sort
native.
Of. Okay, so what is the definition then of native literature?
Anything to do with Indians, I guess.
But then, I mean, if that's the definition, then white people can write native literature, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Do you believe they can?
Well, you know of Bill Kinsella?
Oh, yes. I've never read any of his works.
No. Oh, you should.
I know that he, he'll be getting a lot of flack from people.
He's a
like
good writer. I enjoy his writing, and he's a nice person. He's not involved with Native issues or anything.
Mm-hmm.
He just happened to get a voice of Native people.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very, it's very authentic. Like, when I read his books, I'm reminded of my brother and all his friends, because they were a lot like that, you know, like really. So like I enjoy his books, but if people want to say this is what natives are like from his books, then that's wrong.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't, people are very comfortable with his natives, you know. Oh, they're having a lot of fun drinking and raising hell, and that's
what
they're like, you know,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
well, that's the criticism against him, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And people are always, I've been to some places where they try to say, well, why don't you write like Bill Kinsella, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, like, he's a writer and he does this thing. And I do my thing, and I'm sorry if I make people cry, but, you know, that's my forte,
no,
you know?
No, you shouldn't be sorry to
like,
do that.
Yeah, but that's what I seems to come out, you know, like like when I'm writing, you know, like I think it's a real good scene if I feel like crying or something, you know, if it really arouses my sympathy or something, you know. Because it's easier to me than to write humorous stuff, you know. You have to have a knack for writing humorous stuff and make it come off, you know. I don't have that knack. I wish I did, but I don't, you know. But we went to an outsiders conference at the University of North Dakota, I guess it is, you know. Bill Kinsella was invited there too, you know, like he's not a native, but this was supposed to be for native writers. That's where I met Louise Erdrich.
Oh yeah?
And
is that how you pronounce the name, Erdrich?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And James Wilson? I'm not sure. I'm not sure what his name is, but I know it's James. But anyways, like, he was included in that, and to me, like, he shouldn't have been. They should have really picked a native person if they wanted this to
There's so
native,
many good
know?
Native writers, so why should they use non-native writers writing about natives in native literature courses? This really makes me annoyed sometimes. I mean, I've traveled through Canada for 5 weeks now, and I did the same 2 years ago. And when I go to universities, I check what native authors they have. Like in Calgary, they didn't have a single one.
No, Calgary is
not,
very
not
closed.
Even,
you know?
Not even the big shots from the U.S. like Momaday or so. I mean, they've made it into the established literary canon. So has Erdrich. And they weren't there. I was really taken aback. And then at other places. Like in Regina, at Saskatchewan Indian Federated College, in the Indian literature courses, they have also people like Kinsella or Anne Cameron, and I don't think they should be in there.
Oh, wow. That's
They've
really
offered me
amazing
a job there, actually. I might be going there, teaching literature, yeah.
Oh, that would be really...
Yeah,
how do you like Canada?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Big. compared, like, that's what Giorgio says,
oh,
you know,
yes,
like it's
yes.
His relatives, you know, sometimes they come in.